Thank you for coming aboard. We are now prepared for liftoff. As this ship takes off, please turn off your cell phones. Also, please refrain from all preconceptions as to what the true nature of reality is. Please feel free to wander around the ship after takeoff, but do remember that this is an interdimensional vessel. There are no walls or boundaries at all. Don't worry. There's absolutely no possibility of ever becoming lost aboard this vessel, for there is only one place to be and one time to be in. This point is infinitely small as it is infinitely large, and it is closer to you than your own heartbeat. Thank you all for joining us on this expedition aboard the Psychonautilus. Remember to keep your mind's eye wide open for the remainder of this journey.
Welcome to our 15th expedition aboard the Psychonautilus. And there's a bit of an announcement that comes with this, in that this is our last expedition aboard the Psychonautilus in this form. This is, I'm not going to say the end of the Chronicles of the Psychonautilus, but I will say it's the end of the audio versions of the Chronicles of the Psychonautilus. I am going to move from this podcast into a new concept, a new podcast that is really not going to be anything majorly different from the Chronicles of the Psychonautilus, but it is a refinement of my concept. All right, so the title of the new project is called The Portal. So this is technically the last Chronicles of the Psychonautilus that will appear audio form only. And hopefully in the future we will be developing short videos, or maybe even like little short films based on the Chronicles of the Psychonautilus concept. So, the fact that this is the last audio version of the Chronicles of the Psychonautilus, it is the end of a chapter, it is not the end of a story. And basically with this last show, one of the things I wanted to do was kind of a chapter review. What was I trying to do with Chronicles of the Psychonautilus? What was I trying to say? And even though I just started it and was winging it from beginning to end, I do believe that there was a main theme, and that, well, there were common threads that ran throughout the entire series. And if there was one thing that I could say that I was really trying to convey, it is that we live in a alive and intelligent and responsive universe. What I feel is that we live in a world that is a natural, spiritual reality, and that this entire space we live in interacts responsively and directly with each individual life form at every single instance. The other message that I've been trying to convey is that we can connect with this intelligence that surrounds us, that we live in and amongst and are a part of, that we can connect with it. And I believe most of what we call shamanic work is about this ability to connect. We need to unfracture our mind. We need to become connected to the universal mind of Source. And the best way to do that is to become unfractured. So all of our thinking that separates and fractures, we need to correct. So every concept or thought or philosophy that adds to the fracture, if you have a religion that sees a God outside of yourself, that has some ruling aspect over the world that you exist in, and can be unhappy with you or can be happy with you, can be benevolent or malevolent, it can be a giving God or a destructive God, you know, a vengeful God or a angry God of any kind, you know. I mean, whether the God is good or bad, loving or caring or angry, it doesn't matter. You're perceiving the God outside of yourself, in control of the universe in some way. This is a philosophy that fractures your consciousness. Apply it to anything. Any philosophical system, any metaphysical system, any theosophical system, once it creates this entity outside of yourself, you've been fractured. Well, something happened way back when, what I've referred to before, what the Taoists call the time of the great separation, where the human had been kicked out of order with the rest of nature. I started the Chronicles of the Psychonautilus talking about connection, because I believe that's what it all comes down to. We live in a world that does not support this connected consciousness. We live in a world that continually separates and fractures our concept of connected consciousness.
The information in your head is priceless.
I do believe that we are non-physical beings. I believe that we are multidimensional beings constantly. It's funny because you'll hear this conversation about UFOs. You know, the debate that the extraterrestrials come from some other planets throughout our galaxy, or are they extra-dimensional entities? And every time I hear this debate, I think, what's the difference? What's the difference? Anybody at that level of technology moving freely throughout our galaxy or from other galaxies is traveling interdimensionally. They are aware of the reality that they are multidimensional beings, and they have learned to move freely within the nature of space throughout the universe.
I will not be pushed, filed, stamped, indexed, briefed, debriefed, or numbered. My life is my own.
And I believe we are constantly in a state of multidimensional reality. We are not simply three-dimensional beings. We perceive ourselves, we are aware primarily of our three-dimensional reality. Our awareness exists in a three-dimensional reality. We don't, we never have, and we never will. As our awareness expands, we will become aware more and more of our true reality and our original form, which is a multidimensional form that can move like a sliding scale, like a sliding musical scale up and down frequencies into higher densities and lower densities. If you increase the speed of your frequency of vibration, you become less and less dense and you move into higher realms of awareness, higher realms of consciousness, where the universe is much more fluid, and expansive. And if you drop your frequency down into lower vibrations and you start to experience yourself as a denser and denser entity, then you experience yourself as existing in a physical realm. But you're not anymore at that time physical as you are at any other time. It is simply your awareness of these resolutions of existence.
My life is my own.
Your reality never changes. The reality of your original form never changes. Your awareness of your reality is what changes. And this awareness can be manipulated and conformed by outside influences, by societies, by mind pattern programming, by all the things that we've been learning that have been used against us, that some will call the war against consciousness. We find that this can be manipulated and distorted.
My life is my own.
I don't believe it can be controlled, and I will resist anyone who says that we are controlled or that we live on a prison planet. Because if you put yourself in that prison, you are not a prisoner, you are a willing inhabitant of a prison. You are not a prisoner.
I will not be pushed, filed, stamped, indexed, briefed, debriefed, or numbered. My life is my own.
If you're the one who walked into the cell, if you were coaxed or led or manipulated.
I am not a number. I am a person.
I understand it may feel as if you're trapped, but you're not trapped because it's your choice. There aren't locks on our cages. All we need to do is step out.
I am not a number.
Every one of us has agreed to our subservience. Every one of us has agreed to our confinement. Every one of us has agreed to our captivity. We may be trapped. We may be confused, disinformed, tricked, hoodwinked, and deceived. But we are not enslaved. We are not captives, and we are free.
I don't know who you are, or who you work for, and I don't care.
In essence, every one of us is free. You don't have to acquire your freedom.
The information I know about is priceless.
It is there, right where you left it. Maybe you left it many lifetimes back and you don't even remember that you ever had it. But it is right there where you left it. There is no freedom to be acquired. There is no freedom to be sought or had.
I am not a member.
Because freedom exists. It is infinite, permanent.
I will not be pushed, filed, stamped, indexed, briefed, debriefed, or numbered. My life is my own.
Your soul cannot be lost. You cannot lose yourself ever because this space at the center of your being, the pure essence of yourself that is closer to you than your own heartbeat, is pure and incorruptible.
The information I know about is priceless.
And remains so no matter how far you go, no matter how lost you become, no matter how depraved, sinful, evil, and deranged you become, that space inside of you is incorruptible. and infinitely pure, and remain so until you remember your original form, just right there, waiting for you to remember. Well, here's a little something that you've probably not heard on any podcast before. It's something I'd been wanting to put on a podcast for a long time. It's a recording I did of my cat as she had just given birth. And the kittens were trying to find the nipples right away, right? After she had cleaned them all up and they had finally gotten their mouths onto a nipple, she just started purring away, and I grabbed my recorder to record that purr. And I always listen to my cat's purring, but this was a very special purr. She had just given birth, and she was very happy and relaxed, and you know, everything had gone well. So I was just playing this through the speakers on the stereo, and I realized that one of the kittens was sleeping right next to the stereo. And I saw her lift up her head and turn towards the speakers to listen. And as she was listening, she just closed her eyes and looked as if she went into a trance. Well, that's what I recommend everyone does with this segment right now. If you're not driving, just close your eyes and just listen to this purr and really let it soak in. There's really nothing on this planet that sounds like a cat purring. Well, and there's very little I can think of that is this soothing to listen to. So, if you're not driving, it's safe to do. Just close your eyes and listen to this for a minute. Thank you. I hope to make a complete meditation tape of this particular purr. I might just kind of loop it so that it lasts long enough for a meditation, maybe 10 minutes or something like that. And maybe I'll blend it with some Schumann frequencies or something like that, who knows. But anyway, I'm going to experiment with meditation tapes with this particular purr. And when I have something like that, I'll make it available, of course, for people to download. Well, I'm here with Madame Michelle Lane.
Bonsoir.
So tell me, what is it like to be married to the captain of the Psychonautilus?
It's scary. It's cool. It's never boring.
Had you ever heard of podcasting before?
I'd heard of it, yeah. But I never listened to any podcasts. And I haven't listened to many of my husband's podcasts, I must say.
You've listened to...
Because he won't let me.
I can't get you to listen to
me. Yeah, because I'm a busy woman.
But you let me do it, and that's pretty cool.
I'm a cool person. Well, I'm married to a cool husband.
I never thought it would catch on myself. I thought it would just be a little project that I would put out there and 3 or 4 people would listen to it.
It's good for your ego, though, that way, though. Because I don't think you would have been able to take a failure.
Oh, come on. You make me sound like I'm...
No, I don't.
Well, I wouldn't have considered it a failure.
3 people? You wouldn't have considered it a failure?
No, it would have, if I liked it.
No, you put a lot into it, and it's good that there's a lot of feedback. Because my husband's got talent. In many what?
Multimedia.
No, that's not what I meant. In areas, many aspects many of life. Skills. You know, he's got many skills. He's a multi-skilled guy.
So,
professionally, personally,
what is it,
stuff like that.
What is it like living in a house that is under renovation?
It's tiring. It's stressful. It's sometimes very unpleasant. It's scary because you think, oh, what have we done? Are we stuck with that, which is our home, which is our house, but it's our home and it's great.
So what do you really think?
I really think what I've said, D.
I'm starting the fire in the yurt here, and that's the sounds of the fire getting started in the rocket stove.
No, it's true. Sometimes you think, we'll never be able to make it, and then it's your home, and you like it the way it is, but it's... You know, you always say you get claustrophobic, and I think everybody does.
I do, yeah.
Next question.
Okay, what do you think of the idea of the new podcast?
What is the idea of the new podcast?
The portal.
Okay, what is the portal going to talk about?
Same stuff, basically.
Then why change?
Well, it's just a remodeling.
Mm-hmm.
And restructuring of the concept. And I think I... going to refine it and make it less of a production so it takes less time, but it gets to the point, you know, so I focus on the interviews and the conversations and not so much of the creative atmosphere. And
well, you're going to miss that.
I know, but that's what I'm hoping to pour into the documentary work and the documentary film work.
I see, that makes
work.
Sense. I think any
the portal
project of yours is a great project. The difficulty is to go from the beginning to the end.
Yeah.
With all the other things you have to do at the same time. Okay, folks. All in all, to put, you know, in a nutshell, It's great to be married to Adam Lane. Sometimes it's frustrating. But as I said, it's always interesting and never boring. And he's a beautiful soul on top of being a good-looking dude. And it's cool. It's cool. He's mine. So it's too late. Maybe in the next life. Although he's going to be with me in the next life too. So c'est la vie. I think I was very honest in all my answers.
That was really good. I wonder if...
You want to stay for a while to make sure it's done?
Yeah,
put it to bed.
Okay, well, it looks like we got the rocket stove well lit. Starting to warm up the yurt for the grandma. Listen to that. That's why they call it a rocket stove. Another one of my ongoing creations here at our little homestead is my experiment in rocket stoves. And this heats up the yurt real nice. So we're happy with it. And it's an amazingly efficient burner. When it's really going, there's hardly any smoke coming out of the chimney because it burns so efficiently. So now that we got the fire started, we're going to head up to the house and put the kids in bed. And that's the life here in the country. Oh, hello everyone.
Hey,
Oh, yeah? You could hear us? You heard us.
Deep space message just came through from another interdimensional research vessel. It's the Entheos.
The Entheos, eh? A fine ship, that one. I know our captain well. What does he want?
They want us to join them.
Okay. Where are they?
They are orbiting a planet in the Arcturian system.
Oh, that's a long way away.
We're not going to cover that kind of distance anytime soon. Unless someone knows a wormhole, stargate, or maybe flying through a sunspot.
That's a possibility.
Alright, Roy. You ready to fly this ship into a sunspot?
Okay, well, the idea is you fly straight into a sunspot. And if you don't burn to a crisp as you fly through, you fly straight into the black hole at the center of the sun. Black hole, or what you all call a singularity. And fly into a hole in space and you pop out through another hole in space. The trick is knowing where you're going to pop out. This ship is not equipped for that level of navigation. This is an interdimensional vessel, all right, and we can fly straight into a sunspot. right into that singularity. There's no guarantee where we're going to pop out.
We could be waiting a long time for something large enough to fly into.
They have information that a sunspot large enough will be opening soon.
Okay, well, how do they get info like that? That's very interesting.
Another ship could do it. How on earth are we going to navigate that?
They've set up a hyperspace beacon. And they say that all we need to do is stay locked onto its signal as we cross the event horizon. They'll be able to pull us through onto the other side. As we enter into the singularity at the center of our sun, we will simultaneously emerge from the singularity within Arcturus.
Wow, that's some incredible technology. Who have these guys been talking to?
If there was like some kind of disturbances or fluctuations, it could affect time, and we may not wind up on the same timeline as we left.
Which means we could be traveling for a very long time.
If we don't hit the same timeline, you don't know where we're going to show up. I mean, it could be Earth in the same time, but a different future.
We might get home, but it might not be the same home that we left.
It's an interesting concept.
You know me. I only know one time, and that's right now. And our good friends are calling us. I think we should meet them.
I'll work with them.
If we want to do this, then we only have 27 hours to align ourselves properly.
Well, sounds like they've done all the hard work. You all ready for this?
Sure, I'm game.
Yeah, well, I know I'm called the pilot, but I don't fly this ship. She flies me. So if she knows what she's doing, I know what I'm doing. Let's go. Those of you who've never entered into a singularity before, don't be surprised if you forget who you are or where you are. You might even forget if you ever were. Don't worry, as we come out on the other side, we begin to regain density, and you'll remember who you are. Guarantee it. You'll find all your fingers and toes right where you left them. That sunspot, baby. You ever seen a bigger sunspot? There's not gonna be any trouble hitting that target. There we go. I know. Thank you.
if we don't find our way back?
My intuition tells me we're going to find a portal somewhere.
I had learned a lot doing the Chronicles of the Psychonautilus, and the Chronicles was a really creative project, and I was most of the time trying to just put as much into it as I could. I wanted complete listening experiences where I created whole worlds almost inside of these shows. And I learned a lot, and I've had a lot of fun, but in order to continue, I started thinking of the long term and what did I want to do for the long term. And by changing names, I'm basically trying to refine my concept of the podcast. I'm really not trying to change what I'm doing as a podcaster. I'm just trying to focus and to create this backdrop for podcasting that I can keep for a long time. And many, many years to come. So, Wu Wei Productions is the main body of what I'm trying to create. I'm basically trying to invent a company for myself. I'm trying to invent a job. I'm trying to invent a career, even if it could go that far. I'd love that to happen. And in order to do that, I think you have to create some substantial works. You either have to write a book, make a movie, do something substantial. And the podcasting is a great exercise, and it's a great place to start, and I think it's a great way to get the word out about other projects, but I don't expect to be able to actually make a living or anything like that from podcasting. So I dreamt up what would my dream job be, and I've always wanted to make movies, I've always wanted to make documentaries, and I've always wanted to get involved in film. And so I said, to myself, well, if I could invent something for myself, I would invent a multimedia production company. And I came up with Wu Wei Productions. And this is what's happening. I am building my company in the dream time for it to manifest in my waking world. And so I think it's happening. I really do think it's happening. So what do I mean when I say that I want to build something within the dream time so that it can manifest into my reality? Am I talking about the law of attraction? Am I talking about that we create our own reality? Because when I looked at my life, I did understand that what I thought about, I brought into my life. Everything I ever thought about bringing into my life, I was able to bring into my life. I did notice that the way we think affects our reality. So, but that's different than saying it creates our reality. Well, what do they mean when they talk about the law of attraction? Well, I started to think of it as that our thoughts have magnetic qualities. To me, that was a easier visualization than this law of attraction. For one, calling it a law kind of seems grandiose. So I see that our thoughts do have this magnetic quality, and that you are thinking about, you do attract into your life. I recognize that that's real, and that's... and from experience, I've seen it happen over and over and over again, and my life is an absolute reflection of that, you know. So this mystical, magical nature of our thoughts affecting reality. And so I know a lot of other people have thought about this, and they said, well, wait a minute, we can't be creating all of reality. So they started to call it co-creating reality.
And even then, I started to think about that, and I started thinking, you know, that's still pretty damn presumptuous that we are creating reality at all. I was looking into all of these kinds of things a long, long time ago. I was actually raised that way. Even, you know, my grandparents in Oklahoma were almost like hippies in comparison to the people around them. You know, they were pretty conservative too, but they were teaching me about the power of positive thinking and how your thoughts attract things into your world and things like that ever since I was a child. So I've been thinking about it for a long, long time. Just a few days ago, I kind of had an epiphany or a revelation of sorts on how this all actually works. How do our thoughts affect or manifest realities or aspects of realities? I was thinking of the brain, and I was thinking of the brain in the terms of a quantum computer. The functions of our brain that we are the most conscious of are, in a sense, a kind of bold print, and we don't really pay any attention to the billions and billions of details that our brain is involved in. The metaphor of the computer and the brain are really good in that you're using your computer and you're using your software programs. We see the pictures on the screen and we see the results of all the dials and adjustments that we make to the program, but we don't see all the trillions and trillions of calculations that the computer makes to operate that software. We don't see the code. We don't see what was written in the program to make all of this operate, and we certainly don't see all the jillions of calculations that your hard drive is making. You just don't know. You know, if we were to know every individual detail, every synaptic connection that was happening, we would be overloaded. We would freak out. We wouldn't be able to function. So you can see right away that, you know, how we choose certain layers or certain surfaces to dwell in where we are comfortable. And some people are more comfortable with a more deeply immersed layer, and many people are comfortable in a very, very surface layer. We are aware of what we hold within our conscious attention, and the rest just kind of goes on autopilot. Well, the function of autopilot is what I'm getting at, because you know how computers can connect in a larger network, just like with SETI. If you join your computer to their network, your computer can operate as a part of a whole, and all the individual computers link together in this great network of computers that create a great big super mind. So all the little individual parts, all the different computers, network together and create a very large computer mind. Well, our brain operates in very much the same way. Every human brain on this planet is interconnected through a great network, a great energetic network, which resembles a grid-like network of these computers. And this network thinks. This network thinks as one mind. What links your brain to this network is what we call the mind. The mind is how you interface with your brain. Brain functions basically are local. The mind application is, I believe, local and also non-local. The mind is the, if the mind is the user system of the computer brain, then it operates locally within the organ between our ears, the brain, but the mind also operates outside of the gray matter of the brain, because the mind is this interface. Anyone who's had an out-of-body experience knows they can get outside of their body, turn around and see their body. I've seen my body from the ceiling looking down on the top of my head, and for a while I didn't understand what I was looking at because I've never really seen myself from the ceiling looking at the top of my head. And I was like, what is that? And then I went, oh, that's me. And I was thinking just like I'm thinking right now. I was thinking outside of my body, as you would say, projected outside of my body. And I've traveled quite far outside of my body. I found that I had an energetic body that would take on basically any form I chose to imagine. Unless you just completely write off all of that experience as brain chemicals and wildly firing neurons, well, you know, that's one way of looking at it. It could have been just a wild serotonin party happening within my pituitary gland, but I know from experience that we can exist outside of our bodies. As I've not only been outside of mine, I've watched at the moment of death when the spirit exited the body, and I even communicated with that spirit after that body had died. This happened when I was young, and I told this story in other podcasts, but so I know that there's this outer connection. So basically, our mind hooks up outside of ourselves, outside of our fleshy brain. There's the mind, and the mind, being the user system of the brain, is also how the brain interfaces with consciousness. The way I think of consciousness, that consciousness exists completely non-local to your brain. Consciousness is like what is referred to as the noosphere. The noosphere is what I'm talking about, is this network of human minds. The noosphere is all of the minds of humanity interconnected energetically and working together as one mind. That is how that mind has the quantum computing power to actually manifest reality, to actually hold together a construct of consciousness. And where we move around in energetic bodies, we move around in this, what my friend Neil Kramer called the ultra soup. And everywhere we move, we experience a three-dimensional reality. You know, I knock on the table and it's there. But actually, by knocking on the table, I just scattered the atomic particles throughout the kitchen there and into the floor and beyond. And atomic particles from my knuckle are now embedded in that wooden table. And yet the table looks the same, and all the nicks and scratches are all the same, and everything is exactly as it was, even though energetically and atomically it has changed. The only consistent thing in this realm is my energetic body, because I just use whatever matter is in whatever space I move to. If I stand up and walk across the room, that atomic structure that was arranged around my subtle electric body over there doesn't exist anymore. I have just rebuilt an atomic structure over here around my energy body. The atomic structure does not stay the same, the energy body does. This is how we move through this space. This is how we move and actually don't move. Because this is the really trippy part, you know, is that basically the only consistency is your subtle electric body, and all of the atomic mass that we swim around in
It's constantly in a state of creation. Particles are particles only when you're using them. Only when someone is observing them. Only when there's contact. I used to explain it like this. Imagine that nothing anywhere was solid or physical or had any kind of substance at all until you looked at it, thought about it, reached for it, or touched it. So if you think about it, when can you ever corroborate the existence of anything unless you do one of those things? Think about it like this. Everything around you is in a formless state, and it only becomes formed at that moment of contact. You know, even if you reach behind you, you don't have to look at it to make contact with it. You don't have to even know it's there. Obviously, you can walk out into the street and get ran over by a car. That's the aspect of the subconscious. That's how much the subconscious is creating our reality at the same time as our conscious mind. Actually, when we really look at it, the subconscious is creating our reality more. That's the predominant creative factor in within our consciousness is our subconscious. That's the incredible power of the subconscious in its creative ability, and why our world looks so chaotic in a lot of ways is because our subconscious is the predominant creative factor of our mind. And I think, I'm not positive, but I think that's in quantum theory what they're talking about as the observer effect. I might not be correct there, you know, scientifically, but to me, that's what it means. So this is the metaphor that I use to try to explain the formless nature of reality, and then the instant that it becomes formed. I mean, if you look with your eyes open, straight ahead, what around you is in focus? Only that that you're looking directly at. What if it isn't in focus until you look directly at it? What if it isn't in any kind of form until you make that contact? And you can make the contact with any aspect of the mind. This energetic construct is there. This is what I'm saying. It is there. It is real. It is not an illusion. The Maya illusion is that we think that's where it ends, at the wood of the table. That's the illusion that is spoken of in Sanskrit as Maya. But it is real. That has been proven in the laboratory, is that our subtle electric bodies do have individual prints, just like fingerprints and DNA. We need to really get into the experience of this reality that we live in, the depth of experience. This takes extraordinary levels of perception and an expansion of consciousness in order to experience this fluidity of reality. So this revelation that I had is that the mind that creates is this super mind of human consciousness, this super mind of all the different minds of humanity. But it's not just our minds. All species have noospheres. This goes for all life on this planet. All life has a noosphere. Grass has a noosphere. Dogs have a noosphere. Cats have a noosphere. My chickens, they got a chicken noosphere. There's bacterial noospheres. All of these noospheres are embedded in this same space. I'm not talking about levels. This doesn't go from, you know, here out into space and the noosphere is not floating somewhere out beyond the ionosphere. Calling it a noosphere is just a conceptualization of this network, because It all exists right here at this point of perception. Like your radio. You take a radio and you turn the dial up and down and you bring in different radio stations. All of those radio stations are embedded upon themselves, are embedded upon radio waves, all existing right here within this space. All of the multitude of frequencies. And if you turn the dial up or down, you can tune in one station or change the dial, tune in the other station. They all share the same space. They're separated by frequencies. It's just like light. There's one light and it streams right through your window. And if you take a prism, you can refract that light into all the many different spectrums of light frequencies. This is how this entire universe is embedded upon itself within the one space, a pan-dimensional, concentric, embedded universe. The organic quantum computer that's in between your ears interfaces with your mind, which then links up and connects, merging together in a network of minds, forming one great super mind, some call a noosphere, and that great big supercomputer of human consciousness is what is able to generate what we call this construct of reality. But you see, this construct that we create is this human construct. We don't create the construct of the grass. The grass itself creates that construct. We don't create the construct of the geese, the wild geese. We don't create the wolf's construct or the eagle's construct. These are all the domain of those individual entities, but they all link in this great embedded network of consciousness. There is interspecies interaction. We are all here living together. I can feel the thought of the grass if I wanted to. I could feel and sense and understand the thoughts of my dog, even my chickens, and even that eagle that is flying through the sky. This is what we do on a shamanic level when we join together with consciousness of nature, the consciousness of the animals and the birds and the trees. These minds are very neglected and overlooked in our society, in our world, very much overlooked by human consciousness, as many humans think they are the only conscious entities on this planet, which is absurd. We greatly overlook some really powerful and very intelligent and super conscious entities that are living right here next to us, and we don't even notice. Talking about the trees, the great chieftains of the redwood forest, the ancient chieftains of the oak forest, these incredible conscious entities in the sacred groves across this planet. We are missing out on that communication because we don't make the attempt. In most cases, it's just because we don't make the attempt to communicate. Or we just believe we can't. Well, that's really, you know, that's the main point I've been trying to make in my podcast and my communications to the world, is that we can connect and we can communicate. And this is how we do it. As a shaman, as someone who's been trying to walk the medicine way, I ask you to consider the consciousness of the plants. I ask you to consider the consciousness of the animals. And I ask you to try and connect. If you try, you will connect. you will make contact. Because they are waiting. They are just waiting for us to make contact. Go into the forest. Sit quietly. Still your mind. Reach out to make contact, and they will reach back. They will. Because they really want to make that connection. They really want us to wake up and find our way. And they're right there, willing to help. Really willing to help. They want to help. They're desperate to help. Because we are messing up this planet big time. And we can get it together. But we need their help. And if you're looking out there in this world, if you're on the internet searching for answers, if you're trying to learn things, you're studying physics and you're studying consciousness and you're studying history and all the great conspiracy theories about history and about consciousness and all of these things, all the things that we're discovering every day in this tsunami of information. Well, if it frustrates you and confuses you, maybe it's because you're spending too much time searching the new sphere of human consciousness, when you could be searching the new sphere of the trees, when you could be searching the new sphere of the eagles, of the red-tailed hawk, of the Quetzal, of the wolves, of the great elk, and the caribou, and the bears. You can ask them questions. There's great teachers there. Great, ancient, wise teachers just waiting. You don't need to go anywhere to make a connection to truly awesome, powerful, and wise entities and consciousness. The reason I speak of the trees and the eagles and the plants is because I know of their purity. I know that there is within these natural systems a very protected, balanced, and pure space. And so that's where I go to make that connection. That's where I go to find the medicine way, and that's where I go to find the information. And that's where I go to find clarity of perception. Don't forget those people. Don't forget these plant teachers. Don't forget these feathered teachers. Don't forget the great teachers that swim in the ocean, the dolphins and the whales. And don't forget those great elders that grow in the sacred groves across our planet. They are just waiting for when we're ready to make contact.
Don't find our way back.
My intuition tells me we're going to find a portal somewhere.